Welcome to the Freedom Cast podcast. We're on here with the legendary Matt Wenning. If you don't know who Matt Wenning is, you're probably living under a rock. He is one of only a handful of people with a total of over 2,600 pounds in professional comp. He holds an all-time world record of 2,665 in the 308-pound weight class. He bench pressed over 800 pounds in a full powerlifting meet. I'm just going to list off some of your records here. I think I've got these right. In 08, you did 2,665. In 2011, you were equipped at 1197.6 for an all-time world record squat. Holy shit. Top five in the world from 05 to 2011. And that's your equipped records. And then raw, you were at in 2014 with an 832-pound squat, all-time world record. 2016, 865-pound squat, all-time world record. 611-pound bench press at full meet. And then 2204 total, second of all time total at 308 weight class. Okay, sorry, what does that mean? So you were second all time in the world at 308?
Yeah, so when you do all time total records, that means that nobody before you has ever done more than that, ever.
Oh, wow.
So regardless of in the world, regardless of anybody that's ever lived or ever been recorded. So all-time world records are really the stalemate of, like, that's the top line, because that means nobody in human history at that body weight's ever done that.
That's absolute top. Yep. Nice.
Excellent. Because different generations will have their own world records.
Yeah.
But all-time world records are regardless of federation and regardless of generation.
That's insanity. Yeah. So
I don't even like hearing the words anymore.
They're just, you say what again?
I just don't even like hearing those numbers anymore. They're almost like I was that damn goofball to do that. You know?
And you weren't even, to me, that's not even that heavy. Like, were you averaging around 300, 310 pounds that whole time?
Well, so in the equipped divisions, I was in over 300. I was under 308 because I had to weigh under that to be in that class. But then when I turned raw, I didn't hold on to nearly as much body weight. I got down to around 290 was my best raw weight as far as leverages and feeling more the most athletic and things of that nature. So shaved off 15, 18 pounds as I got a little bit older and actually got stronger with that particular body weight, just because I was just healthier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a lot of weight to be putting on for that. Though even with those records, that's insane. Talk a little, just give a brief background. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but brief background of how you got into the sport. A little bit, I know you've probably exhausted this in other podcasts, but a little bit about your time with Louis Simmons at Westside Barbell. Yeah, yeah. And then how you got into, particularly now with training with the Army and with first responders.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I got hit by a car and I was in a full legged cast and bedridden for a year, and then wheelchair and crutches and all that for another probably 6 or 8 months. And so in seventh grade was the first year that we could play football with full pads. So in sixth grade, I just happened to be at like the grocery store with my mom, and I saw this, it was like Sports Illustrated or maybe it was a bodybuilding magazine, and it was talking about a famous football player at that time would have been like Bo Jackson or something of that name, you know, that nature, early 90s, that said, you know, lifting weights to play the best football. And I was thinking, well, shit, I probably ought to lift weights to play football. And I knew my legs were beat up from the car accident. I was like, well, maybe if I do squats and leg work, that it'll get healthier and they'll get better. And being kind of a, you know, I guess, and now I look back, a smart kid, my mom gets me a membership to the local YMCA. And this was about a mile away, so it was a very short bike ride. And long story short, there were two guys in that gym. One guy was named Tim Smith, was a 500-pound bencher at 181 body weight. And another dude was Jim Dawson, and he deadlifted almost 750 pounds in 1970 before anybody had deadlifted 800 yet. So these two guys were like local legends I didn't even know existed. And so I show up, I'm in sixth grade, so I'm 12 years old, and I'm working out a couple of weeks, and they see me coming in very regularly, and they're like, man, you're a really strong guy. You ought to, you're pretty big for a high school kid. And I said, I'm in sixth grade. And they're like, that's it. Give me the phone. We're going to the phone. We're calling your mom. You're training with us, you know? And so they kind of took me under their wing to have me to have me trained by them. And that's how it started, but very lucky. But I think at the other end of the spectrum, there was another factor that came into play that I haven't talked about a ton. And that factor was that same year, my dad had passed away. And so probably in some respects, Tim Smith and Jim Dawson showing me attention as older adults, male adults, kind of was my father. They became my father figures.
Yeah.
And so not only was it a lifting thing, but it was also probably a guidance thing that I just subconsciously had to do. You know, I just didn't know what that was, but I liked the attention by the guys, and that probably fed the fire at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Briefly talk about some of the time you had with Louis, or at what point did, in your training career, did you get into, or sorry, what was the progression to West Side and beyond?
Yeah. So, I start doing meets. Tim puts me my first bench press meet at 13. Okay. I do 250 in the bench, which was still, I think it's still the record.
Yeah.
Then I think about a year later, I do my first full meet. And I do pretty well. I think I break the state totals in the 14-year-old class. So then I held every state record from 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, or in 18, 19. Then went to my first nationals, placed first, and then went to my first worlds and won. And that's when I started to realize I probably had something, you know, and that fed the fire too, because now I'm on the news at Indianapolis and I'm bench pressing 225 for over 40 reps as a teenager. I mean, I could have went to the NFL combine that year and probably beat the all-time 225 rep record as a 19-year-old. You know, obviously couldn't play football with the guys, but yeah. Was definitely strong enough to hang with them on the bench press. And just so happened, that would have been about 1998 or so. I went over to the Arnold Classic, which is the big bodybuilding show here where I live now, but this was about a 2.5-hour drive. Mm-hmm. And I see Louis Simmons, and I had been reading Powerlifting USA's because I was engulfed in the sport. And I had been reading Powerlifting USA's, and Louis was talking about speed work to get stronger and using bands and chains and all. Well, not at that time, bands, because they hadn't been around yet, but chains and accommodative resistance and box squats and things that you're just not going to hear about, even from the old timers. They're like, what the hell is that shit? You know? And I kept reading about this and I kept seeing he was creating more and more champions. And so initially I go to the Arnold Classic, and I don't know that Westside Barbell is going to be there because the internet hasn't really existed yet. So I'm walking around and I see George Halbert bench pressing on the main stage. And for those people that don't know, George Halbert had 12 world records in just the bench press. And he was a Westside Barbell guy. And I see him hit some big number. And Louis hated the Arnold Classic. He hated the crowds. He didn't like being around those types of people. And I get it now. And so they're walking out. And my buddy pushes me. He's like, you got to go talk to Louis Simmons. You know, he's going to be the coach and the guy that's going to take you to the world numbers that you want to get to. And luckily I had the balls to walk up to him in front of Dave Tate and J.M. Blakely and all these guys that were what made Westside Barbell at the time, and said, hey, Louis, my name's Matt Winning. You know, I'm a pretty strong teenage lifter. I'd like to come over and train with you sometime. And he's like, yeah, what do you lift? And I tell him, you know, and he's like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, you can come over sometime. So I finally get the balls to drive over to Columbus again to go lift it now. What's even more scary than going to the Arnold is going into a gym where you have this expectation that not only is expected of you, but everybody else in that gym are capable of or have world records.
Yeah.
These guys are all the top of the cream of the crop. And so walking in there is like a badge of honor. It's kind of like being a normal soldier and you're walking into a special forces unit. It's like, this is different level.
Yeah.
And I ended up impressing Louis Simmons by doing some tricep rollbacks, and we're using 75-pound dumbbells on the floor. So imagine 75-pound dumbbells for bench pressing is pretty decent. Doing them for a tricep extension is crazy. So I end up blasting out like 15 reps and beating a couple of the guys that were members at the gym as a teenager. And wow. Louis is pissed. He's like, I can't believe you let this teenage kid come in and beat your ass. He actually kicked one of the guys out that day.
No way.
Because I showed up and beat him, they got kicked out.
Wow.
Never saw that dude again. I don't even remember his name. And so at that point, Louis kind of got a little bit of respect for me, starts to invite me back more, and it starts to blossom from there for the next 6 to 8 years.
That's wild. Getting out of Westside and going into training and kind of, I won't say ending your powerlifting career, but on the tail end of your powerlifting career, what got you into training with the military? I saw you were an advisor for the Army. Is it the Army Rangers? And also now with first responders.
That catapulted into all kinds of shit. I was an advisor for the Ranger Regiment. Then I was in charge of all of 4th Infantry with 6,500 ground troops. Then I was in charge of Tucson Sector Border Patrol. Then went back to 82nd Airborne and Fort Bragg. I've been a lot of places. But that started from I was listed, or kind of, I can't remember what you would call it, but I was featured in a magazine, and yeah. I had just gotten to one of the top lifters in the world. This was like 2007. And it said, you know, this guy's one of the top lifters in the world. And oh, by the way, he has a master's degree in biomechanics. Well, that grabs the attention of a general, because those guys read basic magazines too. Mm-hmm. And he sees this dude, he goes, man, this guy's strong as shit, and he's got a degree. He goes, we need to get him down here and have him take a look at our stuff. So I get this encrypted government email. Hey, this is General so-and-so. Would you like to come down and take a look at Ranger Regiment? And we'll pay you. It wasn't very much money. We'll pay you, and you can come down and take a look at our stuff and maybe give us some feedback. And I'm thinking, well, I don't really know a whole lot about military, but, you know, can't be that hard. Mm-hmm. So I go down there, and long story short, they really like what I have to show them. There's a lot of story along the lines of that, but the cliff notes is they really like what I had to show them. So they ended up signing me to a 3-year deal where I'd go down as an advisor, and their injury rate dropped 35%.
No shit.
In rough estimate, saved him about $5 million. So that general, as he left Fort Benning, went to Fort Carson, Colorado, and asked if I could do the same thing with 4th Infantry. So the upper brass from him saw that he took Ranger Regiment and reduced their injuries, and he gave them the worst infantry unit as far as injury rates are concerned in the entire Army, which was Fort Carson, Colorado. 6,500 ground troops, and one out of every three guys couldn't even be deployed due to injury. I mean, this is how stupid they were doing stuff, right?
Wow.
So I went in and gut the entire fitness protocol, bring in all the stuff I want to bring in, and then teach all the upper officers how I want the guys to be trained. Mm-hmm. In about a year and a half, the injury rates fall 50%.
Hot dang.
So now my name is everywhere in the military circles. Well, not only is it in the military circles, it becomes localized with the fire departments. Mm-hmm. So now the fire departments have all these injuries and they can't get them fixed. And they want somebody to come in and start doing the wellness programs to fix their problems. Well, I start looking at it, goes, well, shit, I need to get in with the fire services, because once these guys become a fire chief, they're there for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
What I start to realize is in the military, these guys are getting kicked around too much. They're not bosses in one spot for too long. And there's so much politics going on that to really get the changes made is very difficult.
Yeah.
Whereas in the fire department, all you have to do is get the trustees sold and the fire chief sold, and you got your way for 10 years.
Yeah.
So as I started to do that, I started to realize that was a lot more secure, a lot easier, and I had a lot more control. But not to say that I didn't like to do the military and I didn't learn a lot from it. And I still wouldn't go back if the money was right. But as far as control and doing all that stuff, it's much easier to do that with fire departments. One, because it's local, and two, because the bosses stay in place for much longer.
See a longer change. Yeah, no kidding. So talk about, going back to the military, how has strength and conditioning evolved for the military? Because I know recently the Army Combat Fitness tests have changed. They introduced deadlifts, I think, for the first time ever. And
I actually was on the committee board for the Pentagon to design that.
No kidding. Okay, yeah, so
deadlifts are in there is because of me.
Nice. So I think that's super impressive. So what was the philosophy back then? Because in my mind, it was just run your ass off until you can't. You
run push-ups and sit-ups and everything that destroys your posture and increases injury.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they were doing. And the reason they were doing it, and I'm not being an ass,
yeah,
but the reason they were doing it is because they're fucking lazy. I mean, it's really easy just to point and go run that way for 5 miles.
Yeah.
It's real easy to go get on the ground and do push-ups and sit-ups. It's not easy to understand pressures and imbalances and muscle, you know, structure and understanding load carrying and all these pressures that are on your body and how to combat those areas. And then most importantly, the average person that was coming into the military when those traditional aspects were taken, guys were coming off of the farm. They were already in decent shape. They already were not overweight. They already had a decent amount of muscle because they were baling hay. Kids don't do that these days. So now your average kid plays Halo, thinks he wants to join the military, shows up and has no physical capacity. And then they start them in the same spot in basic training that somebody 50 years ago was started at. It's not the same person. Yeah. So they have to get stronger and leaner before you can add impact, or you're just going to increase injury, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, because you get the guys were actually active 50 years ago.
85% of the job force 50 years ago was manual labor, and yeah. Now 85% of the job force is sitting on your ass.
Right. Has there been a change in leadership attitudes towards strength training, or is it still pretty embedded where no matter what the combat fitness test is, it's always going to be this idea that running is always going to be better? And
it's changing because of the injuries. It's changing because of how much money it's costing the government. And it's also changing because the military brass now that's coming up as generals and such are having strength training programs if they went to college. Whereas 25 years ago, you didn't lift weights to do, I would say 30 years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago, you didn't lift weights to swim. You didn't lift weights to play soccer. You didn't lift weights to do any of that shit. Now they do in sports. Mm-hmm. So it's taken so long because this military guys that are upper level, those guys have to go to college. So they're going to West Point and, you know, the Naval War College and the Army War College, which is great. But see, now those sports lift weights to do those sports.
Yeah.
So my first boss that was a general was very young to be a general, and he was on the Kansas State wrestling team, and they lifted weights to wrestle. So he was a pro weightlifting guy. Back in the old days, his bosses, they just did push-ups, running, and sitting, and they just played their sport, and there was no weightlifting. So they never had, again, if you're not accustomed to it, you're scared of it.
Yeah.
You don't understand it. Well, so now as that age bracket, because what you have to understand is the timeline. Before 1985, there were still 75% of the football programs didn't have a weightlifting program.
Every
college. So the first college to have a strength training program was University of Nebraska in 1972 or 73. So that means that weight training's only been involved in American sports for 50 years, right? So it took about 6 or 8 years for the other colleges to catch on. Why is Nebraska so good? Nebraska was good in part because they had a great strength training program by a guy by the name of Boyd Epley that started the NSCA. Well, so by the mid 80s, the other teams and other universities has caught on. And then by the 90s, most places had strength training program. So if you didn't go to college in the 90s, you never saw weight training in sports. And that's why the military took so long to catch on to it.
Interesting. Okay. So it seems like you're big on injury prevention, which I love for any sport, but walk us through high level your training philosophy. How exactly are you getting there? Because people can strength train and injure the heck out of themselves, particularly powerlifters. How is yours a little bit different than that?
Well, the difference is the timeline. So usually injury comes from a multitude of things, but if you want to narrow it down to the basic things, well, one basic thing is people try to get too strong too fast. That's one of the biggest problems. So we create a base step line to get there. The next thing that we do is with the patients is we're looking for muscular imbalances. So just traditional weight training itself doesn't necessarily reduce injury. But if your mindset is to fix postural weaknesses and muscular imbalances, now you have a completely different set of cards in your hands. So what we do is we take the athletes and we run them through I would consider my type of movement screening. We find where the muscle groups are not activating or playing their part. We design the training programs to make those muscles do what they're supposed to do through potentiation. Then we introduce compound movements.
Okay.
So basically, if you think of it this way, you learn to ABCs, then you learn to spell, then you learn to write sentences, then you learn to write paragraphs. Most people want to start at the paragraphs. Am I right?
Yep.
They don't understand jack shit about lifting, but then they're going to throw in barbell squats. Good idea.
Yeah.
You're going to use a compound movement that takes years to understand how to do perfectly, and you think it's just natural movement. When in reality, you better have all these pieces of the puzzle together before you learn that movement, or you're going to cause a problem.
Gotcha.
That's how you lower injuries with weight training, is timeline and then understanding that the pieces of the puzzle before you see the picture. And then, or if you look at it in that perspective, crawl, walk, run, then you're good. You're good. Right.
Yep. Absolutely. What was in training with the military and getting them to understand this concept, what was the biggest obstacle you had with getting that kind of through their head?
I didn't have an obstacle. I said, you're either going to do it my way or I'm out of here. I don't play those games anymore. And I didn't play those games back then. And I'll tell you why. Because in reality, the first time that I was at Fort Benning with Ranger Regiment,
yeah,
I didn't want to be there. It was it was Georgia heat. I was 300 something pounds and it's just hot and miserable. So I'm just over it. I'm like, look, you either want to do it my way and do it how I'm going to tell you to do it, or I'm driving my ass 10 hours home because I don't care.
Yeah.
See, the general really liked that because I was blunt, I was forward, and I told him what he needed to do. And if he didn't want to hear it, that was fine. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Whereas most people are so scared to lose what they have, they're actually setting themselves up for failure in the first place. Because if you come in with this, hey, it's A, B, C, and if you don't want it to be that way, I'm not your guy. Mm-hmm. You're actually setting yourself up for success.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus going, well, if that's not how you want to do it, then, well, okay, we'll do it this way. Well, you know. I always come in and it's a smart ass attitude, but I'm like, you outdo me in anything in here in the gym and then we'll talk. If you can't, you might want to just sit down and let me lead because you probably don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you have to be careful with that level of, but that's basically what you have to do is come in. They want guys that are going to grab people by the balls and tell them what to do because they don't have enough time to pussyfoot around.
Yeah.
So they were basically checking to see if that was that kind of dude. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But the temperature is what made me that way.
That'll do it, especially with that heat and that kind of weight. My goodness. Yeah. With fire departments, we do a lot of work with them now, but how are those guys different, either from a mindset standpoint or from a training standpoint? And do you address the training any differently for those guys?
Oh, it's absolutely different. That timeline, patience things we were talking about is much more severe because what you have to understand is if you go into the military, you might sign a 4-year thing and then get out and sign another maybe 2 to 4 years. You're in 8 years tops.
Yeah.
I would say for most people, maybe just 4. In the fire service, you get hired on at 20, 22. You're there till you're 60.
Yeah.
That's a completely different mindset because now everything has to be long-term because these guys have to be able to do at 55 what they were capable of doing at 25. In the military, by the time you're 40, you're not in a physical capacity position no matter what you're in, right? I mean, most of the guys in special forces that I saw were in between 25 and 32.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with people in their prime in their military, unless they're officers. And in the fire service, you have this spectrum of people all over the place. And so in the fire service, you have to take it slower. You have to be more cautious, and you also have to get more buy-in because a lot of those dudes, you know, most people think, oh man, these guys are firemen, they're athletic. That's not true at all.
Yeah,
it's actually, I've seen, I would say on average, half of the fire department people that I've ever seen are worse than the average person walking around. They're just skilled with tools. Physically, they're not much better than the average person walking on the street. So you have to know that. And see, I made those mistakes when I first started working with them too. I'm thinking, oh, these guys are alpha males. They're wearing the badge.
Yeah.
They were badasses. And in reality, that's not the case at all. A lot of those guys are there to collect a paycheck and they want insurance and they want to do the bare minimum.
So yeah.
That's the issue.
My impression was that they were just strong as an ox and they just didn't have any cardio and that's about it. But you know, they could train.
Weak as an ox with no legs and have no cardio.
Interesting.
Average deadlift when I first started working with my first fire department was 180 pounds. So I don't, if that's strong as an ox, then I'm not sure what strong is. it was at the least to say brutal, right? Like, you're like, oh my God. And not to say that the military was much better.
Yeah.
But my point being is like, it was a completely different task than I had originally thought that I was getting into 20 years ago.
For anybody who's listening who is a fire chief or is even a firefighter just kind of wants to start to influence their department in the right direction, is there a certain type of training that is better to engage with fire departments, something that'll get them going, pushed in the right direction?
The big thing you can do as a fire chief, as a department, is hire the right people. Mm-hmm. If you're hiring a kid that's 22 years old, and he's already 30% body fat, he's probably not getting any better in 20 years.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is a lot of times the physical capacity of the fire departments are not good enough in the beginning, and then they don't have to be maintained. Mm-hmm. So a guy gets hired in, now the unions are so strong that they're not allowed to be physically tested to make sure that they can do the job, which is complete horseshit to the citizen.
Oh yeah.
Right. And slowly, as injury rates keep increasing nationwide, and as firemen get more and more out of shape because we're hiring the wrong type of people, it's going to cause a huge backlash because they just won't be able to afford to do business because the guys are going to be so unhealthy.
Right.
So what you need to do is be more concerned with how athletic the guys are, and then teach them the job over time versus worrying about how well they test on something written. But now you don't care about how physical they are, when in reality, the job of a fireman is to be a physical badass. I mean, if you were to ask the general population, what's the number one thing you want out of your fireman? I want him to be able to get me out of a burning building. I want him to be able to put me in the medic when I'm having a heart attack quickly because they're athletic enough. And I'm telling you right now, nationwide, that's not the case. And so we're doing the entire society a disservice. And the other thing that's hurting the fire department in general is that the average citizen's body weight is constantly climbing.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
So now think about this. You know, I'll give you an example. One of the fire departments I work for is in a very prestigious area of town. Mm-hmm. They have upwards of 20 people that weigh over 550 pounds. This is in a good area. And these are the people running on diabetic issues, heart attacks, strokes, you know, all these metabolic function issues. Those are the ones going to the damn thing every week because they're so fat they can't even get out of their own bed.
Yeah.
So my point being is, now you're going to send in five firemen that are subpar strength to move a 550 pound person out of their bed. That is just a recipe for disaster.
Right. You got to break everybody's back.
So if everybody weighed 165 to 180 pounds like they should, in reality, you might be able to be a little weaker as a fireman and get away with it, but that's just not the case anymore.
Yeah. Good Lord. I don't know that I've seen somebody that's that size.
Well, because they're not out in public most times.
Right, right.
That's because you don't work on a ambulance or a fire department having to get those guys out of their place to go to the doctor and do all that. We see it all the time. Yeah. So the thing of it is like, you have to be stronger to do this job now. And the problem is that the average person coming into the job is weaker because, again, we don't have gym classes and, you know, people they're not forced to be athletic, and the job requirements are less and less physical every year. And now we have basically what I would consider subpar athletic people doing jobs that sometimes require them to be ultra athletic. And that is a recipe for disaster.
Sure. I noticed with a lot of fire departments I've called, at least here in North and South Carolina, sometimes the issue is not so much the guys don't want to train sometimes, but that they don't have space to even have any sort of setup. For fire. Yeah.
Who the hell designed the damn fire department to not have physical readiness in here?
Yeah.
And see, that's the other problem, is the people that have the money in the pocketbook to build these particular facilities, they're not even thinking about that because they don't care.
Yeah.
Most people, when they're fire department, you're just a number. They want to talk about brotherhood and all this other shit. And maybe in some ways that's true. But in reality, to me, if me and you are firemen and you're not pulling your weight, me and you are going to sit down and have a big talk, because I'm not going to go into a building with you knowing you can't get me out.
Right.
You might as well just sit your ass in the truck and I'll get it done. And if I burn up, I burn up. But there's no sense in both of us dying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem, when the fire department shows up to the scene and you got 50% of them aren't physically active, what's going to happen when it really gets hard?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to be good, right?
Are there any types of setups that you've seen that work really well? I'm talking about equipment at this point. I know barbell plates always, but that you'd recommend as good starter kits for a squat rack, bar, and bench, and plates are kind of always my go-to, and they fit in pretty much any space, even if you got no room. But anything firefighter specific?
If you're trying to reduce injuries and you're trying to get guys that aren't super athletic to get to that point, you're going to need some specialized stuff that's more non-compressive based.
Okay.
So you'll notice I'm big into belt squats.
Yep.
Because now the waist is around my hips. It's not on my spine.
Okay.
I'm big on glute ham raises and reverse hypers because they're fixing posterior chain issues with no vertical compression. Because see, think about what you said. If you got squat racks, plates, and barbells, now everything you do is compressive.
Yeah.
So you're not really going to reduce injuries because most of those guys are not prepared for those types of lifts yet. Remember we talked about the crawl, walk, run.
Yeah.
Well, most of those guys are just getting to the walking phase. So if you're throwing complex movements like barbell squats and deadlifts into the mix, you're just going to create more problems because those guys don't have the capacity for that yet.
Mm.
So what I find is that you want to use, if you can, a lot of specialized equipment to build the base up for anywhere from 6 to 24 months, then add the compressive movements once the muscle groups have been corrected and fixed in a non-compressive state.
Interesting. Okay.
Makes sense.
I probably need to talk with you a lot more about this at some point because some of the setups that I'm recommending are exactly what you said, which is compressive.
Well, that's the thing. It's not wrong if everybody already has a base, which we
Yeah. Well,
so you're not wrong, but you're just not thinking like you haven't worked with 400 guys for 20 years and realize that's not the place to start.
Yeah. No, that's totally
fair. If your goal is to reduce injuries.
Right. Right.
Which is going to be how you save your job, because in reality, performance is one thing, but you can't get to performance without reducing injuries first, because that is what the trustees and the fire chief see as a money saver, which pays your bills.
Yep. Yep.
Performance won't pay your bills, but injury prevention can, if it's done correctly.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense. Yeah. With fire departments, I'm sure a lot of the things you're coming up against are, you mentioned it already, leadership obstacles. If the fire chief isn't bought in, it ain't going anywhere. But how are some of the ways that you've seen other folks overcome those kinds of obstacles within fire departments, particularly with weight training? Because I get a lot of, particularly like, for example, like I mentioned before, if I'm recommending a squat rack, oh no, we only want Smith machines. We only want safe movements and stuff that I don't feel like is going to do anything, or we don't do training at all. The guys can just run outside. It's perfectly fine. Like dumb stuff like that in my mind.
Yeah. It's difficult. And I think it's slowly changing because the word's getting out more and more. But I think what you have to do is, again, if you're in a position like I'm in, where you've been doing it for close to 20 years and you have all this insurance data, now it doesn't matter if the fire chief doesn't like working out. If you can show them that you can save a department $250,000 a year, you're an idiot to not do it.
Yeah.
Just based on finances, not even based on, hey, I'm trying to make all your guys better. A lot of those dudes don't care about that. But if you can say, I can save you $250,000 a year if you buy into this for a couple of years, well, now they can sell that to the trustees as a budget thing. So now when I go into these departments and I say, look, you're paying me, say, $75,000 a year to do all this, but I'm saving you $250,000. That's simple math.
Yeah.
So you have to tie it into that in order to get the non-compliant trustees and fire chiefs to buy in if they're not if physicality is not on their radar.
Yeah.
Guaranteed money in their pockets on their radar.
Got to start with that. And then the value part will come later. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Makes sense. Why do you enjoy training these guys?
Enjoy?
Yeah. Maybe wrong question.
Man, you're trying to get me fucking fired, aren't you? Well, I will say this. There are many times that it's very rewarding. There has been a handful of times the guys come back from a hard fire and they're like, if you hadn't have been helping us, one of us would have died or got seriously hurt. Mm. And that to me right there, it means everything. But sometimes the day-to-day, like bullshit gets really difficult, hard sometimes. I think sometimes in some ways I'm a better manager, as far as if somebody worked for me and did the day-to-day stuff,
yeah,
and I could just be make the programs come in and make sure it's going okay, I would probably be a better employee. But what I find is that what I know is very hard to teach anyone, because they have to be around me for so long to understand, because of dealing with so many different people with so many different age and injuries. And you have to know as much as a physical therapist, be as keen as a strength coach, and then have enough understanding of how the body adapts at different age groups that it makes my skill set nearly impossible to understand unless you're in it for the long game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fire departments and working with them has taught me just as much as I've taught them, and just basically sharpened my sword, because I come in with this idea of what I think. And then barbells and dumbbells and plates, and that's what we need. Mm-hmm. And then you start realizing after 5 or 6 years, that's not where we start. And then, so you go back to this position, but see, if I wouldn't have worked with those guys, I wouldn't have learned that.
Yeah.
No. So I learned a lot from those dudes. And like I said, I have my handful of guys that make it worth it, but there's still a lot of people that I just can't get to. And it makes me upset, because as I get older, I'm realizing I'm running out of time to make changes. And the problem is, a lot of the people don't want to be changed. That's so in some ways it's difficult, because once you get the knowledge now, see, if you don't know any better, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But see, the more you know, the more you can help, but then the more you realize people don't want your help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that becomes frustrating as all get out.
I can imagine. Have you been able to put together any sort of, I know you have training programs, but a training manual for those guys that a fire chief could take it to their station and go, look, we're taking Matt Wenning's approach to fitness, and here's kind of how we're laying that out, or maybe you already have something like that.
The tactical manual is the closest thing I have to that. And then the book I'm doing with Human Kinetics has tactical department chapters.
Okay.
That's going to go to like basically college level, but it's still readable to people that maybe that's not their field.
Okay.
So those two things are going to be huge. The book's not going to be out for probably another year, but the manual's been out for a while, and everybody, the fire departments guys that have it, love it.
Awesome. Awesome. Give us your plugs. So where can people find you? And if there's anybody, military or first responders that are listening, how can they contact you and learn a little bit more?
Yeah. I mean, the best thing is get on winningstrength.com and look what we have to offer. If you're super serious, we have online coaching that is second to none. Everybody that's on the online coaching staff has master's degrees and work with pro level athletes all the way to Olympic level athletes. We're talking like high level people that are tied into the website. If that's not in your budget, we have manuals, and we also have a tactical Train Heroic app for your phone that basically lays out the training with video, so you don't screw anything up. And that's only $30 a month, which is an amazing deal. And it tracks everything in your workout. For free information, if you go to YouTube and go to Winning Strength, we have probably close to 400 videos, not including even shorts, but just long videos that have high education. Some of them are directed towards tactical, but all of it could be converted to tactical with the right mindset. And then if you go on my Instagram, Real Matt Winning, I post a lot of the different exercises that I do with a lot of different ideas. So those are your best channels in order to find the information that we provide.
Excellent. Matt, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of insight into that, and really appreciate your time with this. Keep up the good work. I love that you're involved with those two groups. I think it's the more I get involved with the fire department, the more of a heart I get for those guys. Really, really need people like you.
I'm just trying to get them to listen. That's the hardest part, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of... I hear two sides of the story, right? I hear the guys that are older that are willing to listen and trying to bring the younger guys along and talk about like the difficulty with recruiting young guys. And I hear the older guys that are like super stubborn, and the younger guys that are super stubborn that are learning from the older guys. And it really frustrates me. But
the hard part is a lot of the times the guys I have issues with are the older guys, because they're set in their ways. They don't want to change. They don't want to do anything new. The newer guys see the importance of it a little bit more because they've been more introduced to weight training.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, back where we talked about, like, guys that are in their 50s and 60s, they may not have had weight training at all in their high school.
Yeah.
So they're unfamiliar with it. And sometimes unfamiliarity creates stress and they don't want to touch it.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do it that way. You know, it's never been done that way. Why should I do it this way? So I find that the older guys sometimes are the bigger pain in the ass than the younger guys, just based on that factor alone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. Well, hopefully we can change philosophies this way. So, and yeah. I need to talk to you a little bit more about equipment, I'm sure. But thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem, buddy.